Welcome back to Tuned In with Radio Laurier. My name is Keegan Gingrich, and on this episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Phil from the London-based band Texas King. These guys have been musical powerhouses over the past couple years, breaking through the airwaves and touring all across Canada. This week, Phil and I speak about transferable skills in the music industry, what it's like being an up-and-coming band in Canada, and keeping an open mind in the writing process. Phil, thanks so much for joining me today and taking the time. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm going to start off with a question that you're really going to have to think about. And so there's no right or wrong answers for this. If you were stranded on an island, but you can only bring three things, what are you bringing and why?
I'm going to bring a hatchet or axe of some kind, like a tool, like preferably like a hatchet or axe. Matches or some sort of fire. Preferably matches.
Good.
Like a tarp or something I could use to build a shelter, canvas or a tarp or something. Could use to collect water or also to use as a shelter.
You're keeping it all practical. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to survive. There's no sense of bringing your guitar with you if you can't survive long enough to play it.
You'd be surprised at how many times the answer to that question has been, I'll bring my guitar. I'm like, you can just make one, man. Do it that way.
Yeah. You got to stay alive first, I figure.
Exactly.
Don't worry about being bored.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, it's not too boring on the island if you don't, you know, die. But that's a whole different thing. This one's a little bit more serious. If you could turn back time and tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I guess it would be... I think it would be to... maybe not take yourself so seriously all the time. Cause I feel like, especially, or at least for myself, when I was, like a teenager and maybe like, you know, going into college, I definitely had fun, but I think I could have sometimes taken things a little less seriously and loosened up sometimes. And that's something that I've tried to do as I get older. As much as, like, you know, when it comes to the band and stuff, I am, I guess, maybe a little bit of the more business oriented one, but there also has to be a middle ground. You can't just be all like serious and like driven all the time. But and on the flip side, like, you have to have some of that, because if you're just partying all the time, you know, some people have that problem too.
Yeah.
I've never really had too much of that issue, but yeah, I don't know. There's probably a few things I would want to tell myself, but that's one thing that comes to the top of mind.
Yeah, no, it's great, because I think, especially when you're growing up in those teen years too, you're like trying to find that balance between, you know, having fun and living life a little bit. And then also being like, oh shit, I'm almost an adult. I kind of need to figure out what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
No, I love that. I think that's great. On a bit of a pivot, with everything going on right now, it's kind of one of the main reasons that I wanted to do this and reach out to artists and chat and be like, hey, what's happening? What's it been like for you, you know, from both a personal perspective and from an artist the past few months, navigating everything to do with this new world?
Yeah, well, it's been strange, that's for sure. On the personal side, it hasn't been too bad on me personally. Besides, obviously, it's a bummer that we're not out playing shows. But in March, when the lockdown started, I had like, sometimes when we're not on tour, I will sometimes record local bands or bands sort of around our hometown. Record, produce, mix, whatever. So the tail end of last year and early this year, I was actually working on two separate EPs for artists. And luckily everything had been recorded, and it was kind of just like, I needed to find the time to mix it and get that sort of thing, just to finish them off. So it kind of worked out when lockdown came about. I had all this time on my hands. I was able to mix those two records and get that off my plate. And, you know, that's obviously something I can do alone. So it wasn't like, oh shoot, we still have to like record the whole thing and no one can be in a room together, you know?
Yeah.
So, from that end of it, it kind of worked out pretty well for me. I was able to keep busy for those, that first like little bit when the lockdown happened and, you couldn't be near anybody. I was still able to be productive. Yeah. But from a band's point of view, for us, it's been weird for sure. This is definitely the longest we've ever gone without playing. And we had such a busy year last year. We did a lot of touring and put out some singles. And this year was, we were sort of planning, like we did a tour at the very beginning of the year, like February into early March, right before the shutdown happened. We did like a little 10-day run, and then we had a handful of summer festivals planned and a few like little one-offs, but we were sort of planning to maybe take it a little bit easier this year because we were hoping to get some recording done, get some new songs out or get a record done. And obviously this whole thing, the COVID situation, it really threw a wrench into all that because, you know, we were hoping to get into the studio in the spring or summer. And, you know, it's just delayed everything by months, not to mention all our summer festivals that we had planned, and all that, had to be canceled or pushed to the next year.
Yeah.
So it's just a bummer, and it's kind of strange to go so long, not playing. I think our last show was March 1st in Washington, D.C. And then we were supposed to have a couple weeks off, but we came home, we drove right home after that. And then, we were supposed to have a couple weeks off and then a few more, like little weekend runs leading into the summer festivals, like in May, June.
Yeah.
And all that was toast. So
how did you guys adapt to that? Cause I mean, that's a pretty like a rigorous schedule going from, you know, you guys had two singles out, you had Chandelier, you had Greatest Mistake, touring like crazy, and then just going to standstill. Like how do you adapt to that? What do you react like to that too? Like,
yeah, it's, well, I mean, I guess when it first happened in March, no one really knew how long it was going to be. It was like, you know, well, hopefully this is like, you know, only a couple of months and maybe by summer it'll get, you know, kind of that's what people were hoping or saying at first. So we're like, for the first bit, we sort of had our fingers crossed, like, well, maybe some of the summer festivals, depending on how bad this gets in Canada, maybe some of the summer festivals domestically will be able to do still.
Yeah.
We had one in New York State and that was canceled pretty early on, but we were kind of hoping that some of the Ontario summer festivals we had lined up would pull through. And then obviously the situation evolves and it gets pushed late, like commitments and festivals we had later and later in the year start dropping off. And, you know, eventually you realize that the whole year touring wise is kind of a write-off. But we just tried to, like, we had a good batch of songs written, because like I said, we were planning to do some recording, so we really just took the time to try to add a few more songs to the batch. Like, we always write more than we need to, so so we'll like, if there's going to be 10 songs on a record or 12 songs on the record, we'll write 20 songs and we pick the best ones. So we had a pretty good pile of songs, but when it was obvious that we weren't going to be touring and we wouldn't be able to get in the studio when we were hoping to, we just wrote a few more songs to try to make the record stronger. Wrote from a distance, which is something we've never really done. We've kind of always done it being in a room together. Like, Jordan will write all the lyrics, our singer Jordan.
Yeah.
And he does all of that. And sometimes he'll come with a song idea, or sometimes Colin will have a riff or something will trigger the song, but we usually put it together all in a room, you know, near each other. So to write, from a distance with everyone sending files around on the internet, was a very interesting and different experience for us. Some bands do that a lot, but we had never really done much of that up to this point. So yeah. Learning curve, but I mean, we got a few extra songs out of it, and now we're hoping to get back on track with looking ahead to do the record. And I mean, all it means is that we have a few more songs that might make the record that didn't exist before COVID. So
yeah.
Yeah.
How, in that, I think that's really interesting to look at too. How has writing changed for you guys? You said Jordan does a lot of your lyrics. Have there been any changes in like the themes or the topics of things that you want to put out there, or has it stayed pretty consistent?
I think it's been pretty consistent. Yeah, again, Jordan does all the lyrics, so that is more just sort of what, I guess, whatever he's feeling or feels inspired by. I don't think there's like a as far as I'm aware, it's not like there's a really distinct shift of all like the COVID songs sound a certain way or have a certain theme. But I'm sure that there's maybe things that inspired an idea or inspired a lyric or a theme that has come out of this that has worked its way into a song somehow, whether it be, you know, the whole theme of a song or even just like a line in the song. Yeah. But yeah, from like the, I guess in terms of like just the full band aspect, they're the biggest thing, like I said, was just learning how to send ideas around and everyone record themselves at home and everyone add to it, which is something we've never really done.
Yeah. What was the most challenging part about that for you specifically? Like, is there anything where you're trying to put something together and you're like, I have no clue what I'm doing? Or was it pretty, you know, pretty easy for you yourself?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It took maybe a little bit off the right at the beginning to get everybody set up with a solid recording rig at home. I obviously had one because I sometimes record bands when we're not on tour.
Yeah.
But some of the other guys didn't really have too much in the way of home studio gear. So I feel like when lockdown started to come about, it was sort of just like putting together some basics for everybody so that we could even do this. Everyone had the capability of recording themselves. And then, yeah, I think beyond that, it was pretty painless. Yeah.
I think it takes some good chemistry to be able to do that too. Like for everybody not to give up and just be like, I'm not going to try it. Take me through a little bit of how, Texas King kind of came about. I know a little bit briefly, but I'd like you to maybe, if you can, expand a little bit on how you guys came together and kind of found each other.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we met at Fanshawe College. Like, I guess that's where the band really started. Myself, Jordan, our singer, and Colin, our guitar player, and our original drummer at the time, we met up at the Music Industry Arts program at Fanshawe College. Well, actually, I guess I had met Jordan the year prior when we were in general arts together, but we didn't really we didn't know each other very well. We had one class together. We didn't really talk music, but we just like knew of each other. Like we had the same class. So like I knew him and I knew that he was into music, but I didn't know much more beyond that. We just had one class. And the following year, we were both in music industry arts. And that's when we met Colin. And I guess towards the end of first year, Colin and Jordan started playing together kind of as a duo. Jordan had just moved from Oakville a couple of years prior. That's where he grew up. And so he moved to London for Fanshawe, and he had been playing some solo shows around in Oakville in high school. And he kind of had the name Texas King that he was using to play some solo shows and had a handful of songs. And he wanted some bandmates or some extra, you know, another guitar player and whatnot. Right. So he and Colin hit it off and started playing some acoustic duo type of shows throughout first year. And towards the end of first year, they decided they wanted to make it more of like a full band, get bass and drums and all that stuff. And so they asked myself and Rob Krellen, the original drummer, to come on board and fill out and make it more of like a four-piece rock band setup. So then that's when we recorded our first EP when we were still at Fanshawe. I guess in second year, we recorded that and put that out and just started playing like weekends because we had class during the week. And when we graduated at the end of second year, we were able to tour more, a little more seriously because we all of a sudden we could go on tour for a week or two, you know, and not have to worry like, oh, we got class Monday to Friday. So really we just have to go for like a 2-day run.
Yeah.
And from there, yeah, I just kept, booking our own tours around Ontario and then eventually did our first tour like Ontario, Quebec out to the East Coast. And then, you know, recorded our first record Circles, put that out and booked our first, you know, Canadian like coast to coast tour.
Yeah.
And, it's just baby steps, you know, from there I end up you know, you get some stuff on the radio, you get an agent, you get to start going out outside playing the US, and it's kind of just been a slow but steady, you know, journey ever since college for us.
Yeah. That's it's crazy that you kind of describe it so nonchalantly, just like a natural buildup. And I love that. Cause do you look back on it and go like, oh shit, we just kind of started out doing this as kids. And now we're like, you know, all these years later, still doing this amazing thing that you just kind of, wow, this, it all came together.
Yeah. You know, I think probably if I sit down and really think about it and look back on it, yeah, I don't know if when I got asked to play bass in the band, if I ever thought it was going to end up being basically taking over my life and being like the thing I do full on. Like when I was in MIA, I was there because I was interning in recording studios and stuff, and I wanted to be an engineer and make records. And I guess I sort of thought that my like playing in a band days were probably behind me. I'd played in a couple like high school bands or whatever, but I was looking to get more on the technical side. And when they asked me to play, I was like, oh, sure, you know, it's college. And, you know, your classmates, like we were like throwing shows at like venues around town, and people would have house shows. So it's like, yeah, sure, like it'd be fun. But it very quickly became something a lot more serious and not just like playing house parties. You know, when we put out that first EP and started to get a little bit of love and started, you know, playing outside of London. And the other guys in the band were very serious about it. And I became quite serious about it too. And, you know, I think you just realize, you know, not every band is able to find four members who are all on the same page and have the same vision and are have the same level of commitment. And I mean, Melvin now he's our third drummer. I think he's the one to stay, but I mean, I guess even off the top, you know, we've had to go through a couple member changes because of that. You know, not everyone always has the same life goals and same, I guess, vision of what they want to do with the band. But I think we're pretty lucky that we found that. And Colin, Jordan, and I have been, you know, in the band now for years together, always the same lineup. But I mean, nonchalant, like you were saying, it's true because it was a slow, steady process. It's not like we graduated college, put out a record, and then we were on the radio touring North America. You know what I mean? Yeah, like we started just doing, playing Toronto, trying to get a fan base in Toronto, then, you know, booking our own shows, playing for door money out to the East Coast, and then, you know, eventually booking our own Canadian tour, slumming it. So I think when it happens so gradually like that, you have time to like acclimate and like get your footing. I think it would be very jarring to just go from like putting out your first record or your first single in college or in high school. Some of these kids are so young and they get signed and get put on tour across North America. Like I could see that being intense, but we had so much time to, we knew what we were doing by the time we toured Canada for the first time, you know?
Yeah. And I think about what's so cool is you guys had Circles that came out in 2017. And just after that, I started hearing like in KW, I believe it was Boomerang, if I'm not mistaken, that was all over the radio. And I'd be hearing it every single day on like Dave Rocks and like Y108 and all that stuff. And I'm just like, this song's great. And seeing how like you guys not appeared out of nowhere, but from an outside perspective, being from KW, seeing you guys then, oh, you're here with Royal Tusk. Okay. Awesome. Great. And seeing all these different times you guys came by, and I'm like, it's just awesome. It's awesome to see. And it's cool to be able to follow you guys in that way and see that. So I just want to say that's awesome. What have been like your main inspirations personally as an artist for like what you put into your music? I know everybody's got their, you know, their favorite artists and everything like that. Do you have any that contributed for you?
Yeah, that, I mean, that's tough. The thing is about our band too, is that I think every member has very different personal influence. And, you know, I'm sure if you ask each member of our band that question, you'd probably be surprised we even end up in the same band together. Cause I mean, like Melvin grew up listening to metal, and like, you know, Jordan in his earlier days was more, I think more like the pop or like singer songwriter type of stuff. And, you know, church music when he was really, really young, playing in a church band and all that sort of stuff. So I guess when I was really young, learning how to play bass, I was, you know, I was into bands. Like, I guess I'm like a, like I, when I was a kid in like the early 2000s, right? I was yeah. born in 92. So Much Music was really big. And so bands like, you know, Green Day and Blink 182 and Sum 41 and all those types of bands that were all over Much Music were some of the earliest bands I can remember really getting into that made me want to play play bass and maybe, you know, I like the idea of playing in a band. And then I started going to local shows, I guess, when I was in high school, maybe like grade 10 or 11. I would be able to go to these like all ages shows at venues around London, like the Embassy or Call of the Office or the Salt Lounge. And I would get to see touring bands and also some London bands that would tour outside of just London. So it was great because, you know, I get to see maybe even some bands that you'd see their videos on TV, but they weren't like an enormous band. They'd come play like a 200 or 300 cap room and I'd get to go see them. And then, you know, maybe opening up for that band would be a band like Shotgun Rules, who are from London,
yeah.
and ended up going on and touring the country and looking up to that sort of generation of London bands that were above me. I think that's what really made me want to be in a touring band. Cause when I could be like, there's like 200 people in this room, all singing along to, you know, this band, this all guys from London in my hometown. But everyone in this room knows the words to their songs and are going crazy. And I think that was the first time where it hit me that like, you didn't necessarily have to be a band that was on the radio or a band that was on Much Music to be able to tour and play clubs, like packed clubs, and have people like your band. Because up to that point, you know, being a kid, like all I really knew from music was whatever was on the radio or whatever I'd see on Much Music. So that sort of underground scene of bands in London really opened my eyes to like, there's more than just what you hear on the radio or what, you know, what you see on TV.
Yeah.
Made it very attainable.
Did you like feel that there was like a, almost like a progression of, okay, we're going to go to this show. We're going to sell like 10 tickets. And if we get 10 people out, that's great. And then the next time it's like, oh, there's 20 people at our show. Awesome. Did you see that progression? And like, if so, how did that feel?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, that's still something that we sometimes look at, like maybe not, I mean, depending on the market, sometimes we are just hoping for 10 people, you know, if we're playing like somewhere we've never played before or, you know, somewhere in the US we've only ever been one time, then yeah, sometimes we're like, oh, sick, there's 15 people here. That's more than last time. But in terms of like, you know, even on a larger scale, like, say in London for hometown shows or when we go play in Toronto or wherever it is, we're always still looking at that stuff to some degree. It's like, okay, there was X amount of people here, you know, whatever. Say there was 200 people at the show in Toronto last time. Well, hopefully this time we're coming there, I hope we do, you know, 250 or something like that. Like, yeah, we're always trying to see growth. And I think, you know, especially when on a new record cycle, if you're putting out new singles or you get a new song on the radio or something like that, it's really interesting and kind of exciting to see, just see the growth. Probably one of like the things that comes to mind the most recently was in February, we went to Barrie and we've played Barrie a million times. It's, to be honest, it was always kind of a hurting market for us. We, you know, maybe do like 50 people there or something like that. It was never a great market compared to some of the other cities in southwestern Ontario. But on this this tour cycle, we put out the song Chandelier, and the station in Barrie graciously picked it up, and that was playing the heck out of it. So that, we really saw that translate when we went to Barrie and did a headlining show in February. And, you know, all of a sudden we went from usually, I don't know, 25 to 50 tickets in one of our like worst markets to doing like 200 tickets plus, just because you know, so many people listen to the radio and kind of like what you said, hearing our song in KW. Well, we were never really on the station in Barrie before this. And so now all these people, probably like you, just heard our band on the radio, found out about our band, and started following us. And we were coming to Barrie, and what seemed like overnight, we're selling, you know, four times the tickets.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation I've had with with others as well with regards to radio. People always talk about how like, oh, it's dead or it's not the same as it was. And I'm like, I don't think it's dead. Like, especially for bands like you guys who genuinely appreciate that airplay so much too. Like you've seen the reaction to it. It always just kind of baffles me when I hear that radio is dead. I'm like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of band you are. There's certain bands that I think it would be unrealistic if you're a certain genre or a certain style of band to expect to be played on, you know, commercial rock radio. Yeah. You know, that's just not, you know, some bands just aren't radio bands. And I totally get that. Yeah. Like Spotify and streaming services or, you know, YouTube or whatever, they can, that's like really where they focus their energy. And like we try to do well on those platforms too. But we are the kind of, I guess, demographic and the style of rock band that we are, I think does lend itself to being on the radio. And so if you fit that mold, there's absolutely, I mean, we've seen firsthand the benefit of getting your song played on the radio. You know, people who aren't necessarily into music, meaning like they would never maybe go just to a 200 cap venue to see a local band. Maybe they're a roofer or maybe they work in an office or something and they just have their local rock radio station on all day long. Those people would probably never know about our band. But they, you know, they hear a song come on the radio and all of a sudden they Shazam it, or they, you know, they like it. They look up the band name and they start following you, and then they'll come see you when you come out, when they, you know, you go to their city. So it really is a great way to reach a new audience that of people that, you know, normally wouldn't be so in tune with like kind of whatever you want to call it, like the underground, like the independent, just like music scene.
Yeah. Have you ever had a moment where you're just like, oh shit, like this is happening, or a distinct moment where you've been a musician and you've gone, wow, I can't believe we got to this point? Have you had one of those?
Yeah, I think every once in a while you get like you get little mini episodes of that for sure. And sometimes they're small and sometimes they're quite a bit bigger. I mean, I remember the first early on, we went and we played a Frosh Week show for the college in Timmins, Ontario. And it was like, at that point, it was the farthest we had ever gone to play a show. It was like the farthest from home that we had ever gone to perform. And we drove all night because we had another college gig. We played Fanshawe's Frosh Week at night. And then the next day we were playing Timmins Frosh Week. So we like packed up from Fanshawe, just drove all night to get to Timmins at like 3 PM or whatever it is, so we could do sound check. And I mean, probably the first time that happened I felt that feeling was at that show. It's a small campus, so there wasn't a lot of people, but there was a couple people up front that knew the words to our song, to some of our songs. And I think we all sort of felt like we were just in the van for like 9 hours. This is the farthest we've ever played from home at this point, because we were a pretty new band at the time. We'd only been around for a couple of years, just graduated college. And that was definitely one of those scenarios where it's like, this isn't a family member or a friend or any, this is like someone we don't know who actually knows our band and is like, knows the words, you know. And then you get, you know, the first time you hear yourself on the radio is usually pretty surreal. And there's all kinds of other moments like that throughout. I guess the most recent one was probably just this past fall when we got to go on tour with Big Wreck across North America. And some of the venues we got to play, you know, getting to play like the Burton Cummings Theater in Winnipeg, and we got to do two nights in a row at the Danforth Music Hall, and two nights in a row in Vancouver at the Commodore Ballroom, and all these places that I figured would be a long time before we'd ever got to play, and certainly will be before we can headline. But to get this tour with Big Wreck and get to play some of these rooms and some of these theaters, and having them take us to some of these cities in the US that we had never been to before, getting to go play Nashville, you know, getting to play, we'd done New York City before, but getting to play to like 500-600 people in New York City, there was a lot of those kind of moments for us on that tour Yeah, just being like, well, I didn't think we'd be playing this venue anytime soon. So it's really cool that these guys took us out and we get to experience a room like this.
Yeah. What do you think that you'd be able to do this with anybody else? Or do you think the way it happened is just such a unique thing that it probably couldn't be replicated?
Like in terms of like the guys in the band?
Yeah. In terms of like the group and the chemistry you guys have, you're saying how like, it's wild that y'all have such different tastes and it came together to form what you guys are. Do you think that's a unique thing? Like, would you have been able to do this with anybody else?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like I've known other musicians who are great players and want more than anything is to just like, is tour and be in a band. And sometimes they struggle finding band members who, whatever, maybe that they can get along with, or maybe that they are, that they can collaborate with and that they're compatible with, or even just members that want to stick around, you know, because a lot of people, you know, you start playing in a band, you start touring, and it's usually not glamorous right away. And so people start getting decent jobs and don't want to take time off work, or don't want to upset their employer, or decide they want to start their career. Yeah. And, you just go through like a revolving lineup of members. And like, I know a lot of guys, in bands who that's happened to. So we've definitely been very lucky. I don't know if we could do it all over again, replicate it with another group of guys. I think it's a very fine balance. Everyone has their role, I guess, in the band. You know what I mean? Like with Jordan doing, a lot of the songwriting, and especially lyrics and like all the hooks, you need that. First of all, you can't, obviously, you need good songs. Otherwise, you know, your band's not going to have much legs. So, you know, we got him doing that. And, you know, Colin oftentimes takes care of a lot of, the finance stuff and, you know, getting our van insured and like all that sort of the nitty gritty stuff. And myself as well, like all the first tours, Colin and I would sit down with our laptops and book our own tours, and the stuff that you don't actually start a band to do. It's actually the last thing you ever think you're going to be doing is sitting at your computer for hours and hours writing emails when you start a band. But it's the reality, especially in the early days. You don't have an agent, or if you don't have a manager, you got to do that yourself if you want to go anywhere. And that just goes back to being with a group of guys that are driven enough that are willing to do that with you. So I don't know. It's hard to say, but what I could say is that it wouldn't be easy if those guys were wiped off the face of the earth and you said you have to start a new band tomorrow, go find your bandmates, it would be very challenging.
Yeah.
It kind of just fell into place and we're very lucky for that.
Are there any skills that you think those young musicians that are starting out like today need to be able to have? The thing I've heard a lot is needing to wear so many hats, which I think you're just kind of touching on too. Are there any particular skills that you think people need to have?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of skills that you need to have beyond just playing your instrument. I think if you're going to be in a band, that tours in a van, at least at like a club level, having some kind of skill or etiquette with just like being organized and like replying to emails and being able to reach out to someone, because you might have to reach out to a venue or to a promoter, or even, you know, to other bands. You know, maybe you want to set up a show swap or something like that, and you got to try to reply to people in a timely fashion too, because, you know, if you reach out to this promoter and he gets you back being like, yeah, I have this date available if you guys wanted to play, if you guys want to play it, but you're someone that doesn't check your email every day, well, your opportunity may come and go. So even just like basic stuff like that, which probably in any job is like a basic skill. But again, that's stuff that you don't really think about when you think of starting a band. You just think of like writing songs and touring and playing shows and drinking beers. But there's a lot of sitting at a computer. Like I said, if you don't have much of a team behind you, if you want to even get to that level of getting on festivals and attracting attention of whoever it may be, labels, agents, managers. Yeah. I think they all want to see you putting in the work yourself. I don't think, at least in our experience, people haven't just jumped on board because they heard you have, like, they heard your song and it's really good, and they're just like, oh yeah, there's a lot of potential there. We're gonna sign you guys, or I want to be your manager because that's a great song. It's like they want to see you booking your own tours and making your own music videos, paying for stuff yourself, selling ticket, like, you know, selling out a room. And then they start to take notice that, you know, this is a serious band, and then they're willing to put the time and the effort into themselves.
Yeah. One thing I'm curious about too, you mentioned earlier talking about producing and mixing. Has that come into play for you at all? Other than the past few months, have you had the opportunity to like help produce some of the records or any of the songs or mix or anything like that?
I mean, I always do our demos whenever we're doing like new songs. We always record demo versions of songs, and sometimes multiple different demos as the song evolves, and we make edits, we make changes. So I don't usually record like our releases. I did record and mix the very first EP we did in college, the self-titled record. I did that. But when it came to Circles and all the singles following, we just found it was best to get an outside, like a fifth person, an outside opinion and a new set of ears. Because, you know, our band is like, it's like a democracy, and everyone has opinions, and everyone's opinion is valid. And when you're tackling a song and you have four different opinions of what should happen, or someone, you know, as much as we're all cool and no one tries to take anything personally, if you came up with a part and someone else in the band thinks that part could be better, as much as like we try to have no hard feelings, it's never fun to have your part be told that your part is garbage. You know what I mean? And then you got to go be in a band with this guy, and maybe you guys don't agree, and it could turn into some friction or whatever. Not that we've ever had any serious blowouts, but like that. But it was just a lot easier to have someone who has no horse in the race to be like, yes, that is the direction the song should go. Or, you know, cause sometimes you're so close to it that sometimes you don't see things, or you only ever know it this way, or you have an opinion about this song maybe because of your part. Maybe you don't like your part, so maybe it's not your favorite song. But a producer who's never heard the song before isn't on anyone's side. They're just completely unbiased, and they're just like, yeah, that's the single, or like, yeah, this song's too long, you got to cut that part out. I know it's a cool riff and everyone likes playing that part, but it doesn't serve the song, you got to cut that out.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I haven't really done too much of our recording of the songs that have been released, just more so demos and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think the first record does sound great. Now, You Know, no, is one of my favorite tunes. I think it's a really good one. So it does sound good. So don't worry about that.
Thanks, man.
I'm curious to know, on a semi unrelated note, what are you listening to right now? Like, what are the things that you've really been digging recently?
Well, it always changes. I've been like lately in the last week or two, I've been listening to a lot of like some new music has come out that I've been pretty into. Our friends in Seaway just put out a new song, which is really good. So I was checking that out the other day. The Dirty Nail just put out a cool tune the other day.
So good.
I guess they've done a couple, I think, during COVID, but they just put out a new one like a week ago, I think. So I was checking that out. Yeah, those are probably the two newest things that come to mind. And then, you know, we got friends, you know, I'm always sort of putting some of our friends on rotation, guys like the NSR Collective and all those guys. Yeah, there's a lot of good music out there right now.
Yeah, so much being released. Obviously, Dirty Nail, Doom Boy, great tune. Absolutely love that one. One more thing I wanted to touch on real quick. You guys did Hot Ones in London about a week or so back. Tell me what that experience was like, or that was like, because it looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. I do enjoy hot sauce. Like I eat a lot of hot peppers and hot sauces and stuff like that. just normally. So I was quite looking forward to it. Some of the sauces I'd had before, but there's no question. Like some of the, like, you know, ending off with the bomb. I mean, that's a painful sauce. That's usually gets some good reactions whenever people are eating that one. So no, it was fun. It was just a lot of fun. Lots of friends. You know, Jordan and I did it, and then there was, you know, Brett from the Glorious Sons and Ian Thornley from Big Rec and Kenny from Monine and our friend Ryan from Dennis Hart Collective, Blue Stones. So many buds were on that thing. So it was pretty fun and enjoyable because I like eating hot wings. So it wasn't the worst way to spend an evening. And the money went to a good cause. It was all for small businesses in London. So
yeah. It's good to support local, and like having the community aspect of everybody coming together too is a lot of fun. So it sounded like a good time.
Yeah, it was.
Phil, where can everybody check you guys out, and what can we expect from you in the future?
You can check us out on Spotify or Apple Music, iTunes, whatever you use to stream music or purchase music. We should be there. Instagram is at Texas King Bands. Facebook, we're on Facebook. Just search, you'll find it. I think it's Texas King Official if you need the URL. We have a website, texasking.ca. All that stuff. What's next? I think we have in like mid-September, we'll be putting out a new song. I don't know when this is airing, but it may or may not.
It'll be like a couple days before.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So like somewhere in mid-September, we're going to be dropping a new song on streaming platforms. And besides that, we're just looking forward to getting in the studio and recording more stuff. So hopefully we can keep putting out songs. And now that things are slowly easing back to normal, hopefully we'll have new music sooner than later.
I love the sound of new music. You're making my day and you don't even know it. So, so thank you for that, Phil. Thanks for taking the time. It was nice to chat and to catch up here after a couple of weeks of back and forth. So I really do appreciate you taking the time.
Dude, no worries at all. It's been fun. Thank you for asking me to be on this. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll do it again when things are not, you know, virtual. And the next time you guys are back in KW, we'll get a beer and it'll be great.
yeah, for sure.
Cool, man. Thanks so much for doing this. Phil, Texas King, thanks so much. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Tuned In. Check us out on social media at Radio Laurier, where you can find all the latest updates from our continually growing selection of content. Know someone who would be interested in coming on one of our shows? Find all of our contact information on our website, radiolaurier.com. I'm Keegan Gingrich. See you next time.